and and see the picture well as well. Okay, and it seems like everybody can hear me well, and the picture is pretty good as well. So, let's move on. This is the banner, I guess you've all seen when you registered on our website. So, it quickly describes what is this app room like all about. I think we can move on. So that's me, I'm Elias Weiss, I'm a Senior Solutions Engineer at Starwind Software Incorporated. Like this job, very much, like that I have an opportunity to speak to people and tell them things that are hopefully will have help them and maybe explain something and just like interacting with people. Yep. So, next slide. Quick overview of today's topics. So, we already like kind of got through it, but let's get over it once again. The configuration of Starwind Virtual Sound for Hyper-V. It's not going to be like a step-by-step, very detailed one, because we already had a tap room of that variety. This is going to be like a quick one, just to remind maybe some people who watched previous tap room, or maybe like show a quick config that you could do with no like deep info on that. Then we'll do a failure test, so we'll reboot a host and see if the VM migrates from one host to the other one. And then there will be questions and answers. The most important part, we'll be answering all your questions there. And yeah, so that's going to be it. I'll open our host right now. Here it is. This is our, I don't know if you've heard, we have a hyper-converged appliance thing. It's our new product, which is a bundle of hardware and some software. So this is our stand we're using right now, and here we have Starwind on it. Has three simple small devices, and yeah, so you when you get your Starwind, the console is empty. It looks like this. You can add in the servers, then double click to connect on them or press the button. Then you just right click on the host and it provides you with an options to add devices, add targets, remove the server. I'd guess everybody would want to go with that device. And we would also want to specify the advanced wizard. That is very important because the default one, it provides you with a device creation with default settings only, and this one allows you to specify many things. So we start the advanced wizard, have an option of these three. Mostly people go for a hard disk device, and if we're talking about Hyper-V cluster, then we'd definitely go with hard disk device. Then there's an option of going virtual disk. So creating an image file on your like big storage, and this image file is going to be a certain size, same size as your cluster shared volume will be inside a cluster shared or maybe file share if you're aiming on that. Then there's an option to go for physical disk. This is a disk bridge. You will export the whole storage array to the console, and like it eliminates the NTFS layer of it, but it's less good management wise. So you can choose either of those, to be honest. Like the performance of eliminating like NTFS layer is not that much awesome, like not twice, not even 20%. You're gonna get very lucky if it's gonna be something like 10. And then the RAM disk. This is something we mostly use for benchmarking, because RAM disk is not so good for keeping data on it since it wipes off after a reboot. But soon, very soon, we'll have a HA RAM disk. Maybe like you could use it for some like temp bases of the SQL or so. Pretty useful thing, especially for benchmarking. But for this RAM, we'll stick within the virtual disk and click Next. Some of you might notice we did change a bit wizard. So just to let you know, we're doing work for our console. We're changing some things, making them look better, like more user-friendly, so on. So over here, you can specify the name of your device. Over here, you can select a drive you want to have it on. And then over here, you specify the size of this device. If you have one, you want to create a device using existing virtual disk, you can go ahead and specify that option. We go next here. Two interesting options here. So one is thick provision, which is common objective file system usually. And then the other one is LSFS, which is lock structured file system. So common objective one is a usual image file that you can see over here. And LSFS, it is a device we created some time ago. And it was initially designed for slow spindle drives, preferably configured in RAID 5 or 6, because we all know RAID 5 and 6 has like poor speed for writes and great speed for reads. And what this device does is it takes many small random writes and converts them into a huge sequential write, which increases performance quite a lot. So if you want to do that on RAID 5 and 6 with spindles, you can try it out. Has a downside, which is over-provisioning. And that is something you can read about on our website and LSFS technical description if you want to know more about this device. But here we'll stick within the thick provisioned image. So next setting, block size, also an important one. 512 is for VMware or Xen. 4096 is for Windows, so it is Windows native sector size. And if you are planning to use this device for Windows only, you should definitely specify this one. If not, then pick the 512 one. First caching layer. It is RAM cache, as you can see at the top, and there are a couple of modes you can configure it in. We recommend write-back caching. Some of you might say, like, why would I go with write-back caching if can lose data after, like, a host failure? That's true, and you would lose that data if you had one host. But the trick here is that we have synchronized caches as well. So if you have a one-node failure with write-back cache, nothing will happen. This node will just come back online. Devices will sync up, so no worries. And yeah, so we recommend configuring first level caching, the RAM cache, whichever way you'd like to call it, guys. And we recommend configuring it in write-back mode, which provides a boost for reads and writes. And the size of it, we recommend setting in next proportion, which is 1 gigabyte of level 1 caching per 1 terabyte storage. I'll keep it on default for this device we're creating, so I'm just here explaining things. Second layer of caching, it uses solid state drive, and then you can either turn it on or off. We removed the modes for this one because we, as I said, recommend write back for L1, thus recommend write through for L2. And by saying use flush cache, you're specifying write through. You provide a path to your solid state drives. Give it a name if you'd like to. I mean, if you'd like to change it and give it a size, and the sizing of it, the recommended one is 10% of your whole storage. So if you have a like terabyte drive, we would recommend configuring 100 gigs of solid state caching. So we go next. Create new target, attach to existing one, unassigned management things, can specify name, allow, not allow, specify target name if you'd like to. Go next. And yeah, click create and it will happen. Here we have our new device. Over here. To replicate it over the other box, we have to right click on it, go into Replication Manager, add replica, go through a very similar wizard to the one we were initially at, but specifying the replication links.
Yep.
So yeah, we have authentication configured on this guy. I guess it's this. Nah. This, yeah. Okay. And then you can also select existing, create new, simple stuff, provide a path to it. Use or not use SSDs. Change network config. So this is where you specify the synchronization and heartbeat channels. You click, yeah, it wouldn't allow me since I did not specify any, so click next, next. That setting though, not a very useful one, but still, you can not synchronize those devices after you created them, or synchronize if you'd like to. And then you click create and the replication gets created. We'll probably, yeah, it will probably not like the sync channel I specified because I did that randomly. Yeah, here it gives me the error because the synchronization channel doesn't work. So, in case if that happens, you guys should double check your networking. And then to see what synchronization channel is specified for this certain device, you can right click on it, go into replication node interfaces, and here you have it. We have a good sync channel over here configured as heartbeat, and yeah. So what we want to do is to dial. Okay. Synchronization we need. Let's kill this one and type in 10.0.11.2 on this first. 0.11 and it's gonna be 3 over here, I think. Well, we wanna double check the networking always. So sync. Ah, it is 1. Nice. 1 over here. Click OK. And on this side, replication node interfaces. We want to kill this sync. And we want to go 10, 0. Was it 10? No, it was 11 and 2. So we did add correct networks for that. And now it says that network is fine, but those guys are not synchronized. What we need to do to make them synchronize is to click synchronization and then specify the storage that we will mark as synchronized, which would make it a synchronization source. So I'd want to have this guy synchronizing from this guy. And yeah, this is exactly what we saw. and those devices are now synchronized, then it says that storage is working properly. No networking issues or anything else. This is how you create an HA device in Starwind Virtual SAN. Also, yeah, get a bit more info regarding the settings we have in the console. I would go and iSCSI Initiator, quickly show you how you do the connections here. Basically, discover the local IP, partner iSCSI IP, then connect the targets. So locals are connected through local IP address, and partner connections are connected through this IP address. I'm not going to go deep in that, because that will take away a lot of time. And I don't think everybody's interested in seeing that. So what we want to do is open failover cluster to start doing some actions. So these are three devices we have. Two of them are cluster shared volumes and one of them is witness. We need to have witness for Microsoft cluster. This is just the way it works. So these three devices are over here. And we have one virtual machine spinned up. And it is on the host 2 right now. And I am... And now I'm on host 2 right now as well. Am I correct? I'm definitely am. So what we would like to do is to migrate this guy over the first... Actually, we were on the first host, so we'll migrate it back. I'm sorry. Let's migrate it back to second host. No, we're doing everything right. We'll reboot this node. We'll reboot this node over here. And we'll see the migration process of this VM. Just in case, I'll want to open the failover cluster manager here as well. And to be able to check the status of this virtual machine of two hosts. So what I'll go ahead and do, I'll go here and say restart. Imagine somebody was working on that virtual machine. Did it do the migration so quickly we couldn't even see that? I suppose it did. Okay. So, in the console, we see that connections are lost. And over here, it specifies the particular, like, the IP addresses that are lost. And over here, it says what devices are not synchronized. This is something new. I don't think, like, many people saw that. The health status bar we added recently to our console. And as soon as the second box comes up, I'll show you the fast sync we have. To see when it comes up, we want to ping it. Soon, as it shows us pings, I'll be able to show you the fast synchronization process. Meanwhile, I think we could move to our next topic, since I've already showed you and told you everything I wanted to during this tap room. And the last one, my favorite one, the most important one, is questions and answers. So I will be reading all of your questions. If I miss some of them, I'm very sorry. I'll try my best to answer them all. Sam asks a question regarding the cache size. So, for the caching, for the level one caching, if you have a if you have a 1 terabyte device, you want to assign 1 gigabyte of level one caching and 100 gigs of level two caching. Reading through some other questions. Great question from Alan. How reliable do you find the SSD drives to be? Find them to be very well. I actually really like any configurations that have SSDs, especially all flash ones. And as far as I heard from customers, having all flash config provides you with it. They are reliable as well as really fast. But that very much depends on your workload, though, because if you have like huge farm and the workload is very, very high, SSDs will burn out pretty quick. Sam asks, great question, how to verify cache usage and if it is being utilized. That's a great question. We're now working on implementing a thing called Cache Manager into our console, which will show you that statistics, how many caches utilized, what operations are being cached. You can hot add or hot remove some amount of cache through that Cache Manager. So, unfortunately, you cannot track that now, but we'll be able to track that very, very soon. As for the second question from Sam, and when is SSD cache beneficial? SSD cache is beneficial when you are when your workload is like really, really read intensive. Then it is very beneficial, since we have SSDs in write through, which does caching for reads only. Great question from Jan Jacob. I hope I said your name correct. So, do you need level 2 cache when using a 100% flash storage system? Yes and no. Usually, when you buy a certain amount of SSDs, they are all identical. And in a scenario when you have a full flash and you want to assign SSDs that are the exact same as for the underlying storage as a level 2 cache, there's no point in doing that. But you can have some SSDs for underlying storage and then purchasing faster SSDs and use those as level 2 caching, and that would make sense. For example, like an NVMI, NVMe, not I. Oliver asks, can I use SSD for read cache? Yes, you can use them for read cache only. Luke asks a interesting question. Can the nodes use different disk types? Can node 1 use SSDs and node 2 use spinning disk? So we'll be running on SSDs. What would fail to spinning disks in the event of a node failure? Luke, unfortunately, that is impossible within like StarWind capabilities, since our synchronization is active-active, and it is possible to use like spindle drives in one box and SSD drives in the other box, but since our application is active-active and we have a Lua, which will basically make your SSDs work at the same speed as your spindles, and you'll have two active-active spindle nodes. So, technically, the answer to your question is yes, but I wouldn't say there's any sense to do it that way. Or rather, it is impossible to make it, to configure it in a way it would make sense. Chris, great question. With regards to the disk sector size option, should I still pick for 4096 bytes if my underlying disks only support 512 bytes? Yes, it would make sense since StarWind does the alignment for that, and it is much easier to for Windows and much faster to write for to write on 4096 than for 512. Because specifying 512 in StarWind would not make any alignment at all. Chris asks a very good question. When is the version of StarWind you are demonstrating shooting to us? Let me quickly double check. I will tell you when was it released. So the version I was doing a demonstration on is available on the website right now and was released 11th November of 2015, and I would definitely recommend updating to it, since like my opinion is that this particular build is one of the best StarWind builds I ever saw. And yeah, if you're running any other build than that, I would highly recommend updating to it. Osvaldo asks a question, so he was late. Will the session be recorded and available offline? Yes, it will be available on our website, I think tomorrow or on Monday. Great question from, just a second. I accidentally scrolled the questions back to top, so I'll find it, because that question was awesome. Oh, yeah, there it is. What is a road estimate of performance reduction of a shared start running on a RAID 10 virtual SAN versus native? Zero. And that's, so they should be plus minus identical. Like, almost identical. when you're talking about like standalone single image file. And if making that device HA, usually it is a little tiny bit better than the local storage, let's say like 2 or 3%, something like that. That's at least how it should work on a properly configured systems. So, Alan asks, do SSD drives improve RAID 5 significantly? SSDs, to be honest, improve any RAID at all, but I would never recommend RAID 5 to anybody, because, like, I personally don't like it. I'm not saying it's bad, I know many people who like it, and I'm not judging them, and I'm not gonna argue with them, because RAID 5 is good for its redundancy, and it is good for its reads, but if I was configuring a system and I had a choice between RAID 5 and RAID 0, I would pick RAID 0 for better performance and invest money into like a backup solution, or like invest money into RAID 10, which would provide me with the same speed as RAID 0, but would do my best to not face a situation where I would have to configure RAID 5. Sander, unfortunately, so I kind of understood the question, but if you could rephrase it and add in a bit more details, I would very much appreciate that and would love to provide an answer to it. Sam, of course you can get away without SSD cache, especially if, like, average system workload is 50% writes, 50% reads. So, in this case, you can easily get with no SSD cache at all, and just having a couple of gigs of random access cache, which will give you enough performance boost for simple clusters. Great question from Corey. Does using cache give you enough performance to make high capacity SATA drives feasible? Okay, so I'm not sure if I pronounced that word correctly, but I hope I got the sense of this question. So, I don't really know how to correctly answer this question, because does using cache give you enough performance? I do not understand the value of enough, because for many people enough means something completely different. And for example, I've been testing our level 1 caching on a system that had 1 terabyte of random access memory. And I mean, if you are assigning 1 terabyte of level 1 caching to a system and you have 1 terabyte SATA drive beneath that, basically all your production is spinning up in RAM. Yeah, like SATA drives in such scenario are pretty good. John Jacob asks, do you always need to have a heartbeat and synchronization? Yes, you need minimum two channels to be able to configure high availability with Starlink. And one of those channels should be 1 gigabit, not less than 1 gigabit bandwidth, with a very good latency, preferably better than 4 milliseconds. Alan asks, where can we find a detailed step-by-step guide to this HA process? So there are a couple of options. First one is in our resource library. There are step-by-step guidance for device creation, for replication configuration, for two-node HA dedicated Hyper-V dedicated scenario, two-node Hyper-V hyperconverged, three-node Hyper-V hyperconverged, loads of those documents we have on our website, as well as some time ago had a tap room where I went much deeper in the settings, especially of the iSCSI initiator. On this tap room, I almost showed nothing. So went deep into all the configuration stuff, previous tap room, you could try looking for it, and I hope it's going to be useful for you. Can an image be shrinked? Unfortunately not, Sam. Can be only extended. Oliver, yes, you can use Star Spaces to store Starwind virtual disks, but we don't really recommend using them, because sometimes in some scenarios on some specific hardware, we have a bit of a performance losses with Star Spaces. And we actually, since there is Windows 2016 like being released soon, we are doing right now many tests with storage spaces, and what I think is very soon we'll start working much better with them. Jacob, can a heartbeat channel just be a 100 Mbps line fast Ethernet? Yes. It can. Heartbeat, over those heartbeat channels, there are just like pings going there and there, there and there. So we don't need a fast channel for that. Can get even a slower channel than what you mentioned. As for backup solutions, any free options you'd find acceptable, like VManPoint backup? Harry asked this question. To be honest, I'm not really I know many backup solutions, but I do not honestly know whether they have free versions. Well, I mean, they certainly have them, but I do not know the capabilities of those free versions, unfortunately. So, yep, sorry, cannot answer that question. Or we should just... Or we should just shell out the dope and get something proper. Yeah, I think getting something good is a good idea. If a RAID 0 drive fails in node 1, isn't it provided failover through node 2? Well, what happens if in RAID 0 a drive fails on node 1, that drive basically stops working and everything continues to work on node 2. Good question from Jen Jacob. If a drive fails on one of the nodes of a 2-node cluster with RAID 0 storage systems, do you need to manually rebuild all iSCSI links, or you can just replace the failed disk, rebuild the RAID, and Starwind would pick up where it left it? Unfortunately, right now you'd have to rebuild everything manually, so you'd have to rebuild partly the Starwind configuration, and you'd have to rebuild the iSCSI connections as well for the failed drive. But last technical meeting we had, we discussed this, and I asked for such mechanism to be present in our console, and I very much hope we will have soon Starwind catching up everything. But as a temporary workaround, Starwind has a partial modal integrated in its install, and you could, if you're familiar with scripting, you can script this up the way, I mean, script this out and automate this procedure. Automate, rather. Harry asks a question, can thick provision volume be increased if, say, we change the hard drive size on the cluster node, or do we recommend a fresh thick provision setup? Yeah, it certainly can be increased. I see no reasons for a fresh setup on that. Chris, the version you mentioned, which is 8.198, already outdated. So the latest version we have available on our website, which you can find on customer page. The build number of it is 8730. I can shoot that link to everybody in the chat. Just a second. Sent to all. So I just shared the link where you can get the latest version of Starwind. Great question from Sam. In case of a power failure, what's the best practice for coordinating node shutdown? That depends on what exactly do you mean. You have like power supplies or something? We have a lot of documentation regarding maintenance. You might read through, have maintenance best practice doc, as well as how to recover after a blackout, which is published on our knowledge base and written by one of our engineers. So could find that. Just a second. Jen Jacob asked, can you use Starwind to create a RAM disk that is not synchronized, which will be recreated a Bond called Reboot. Yes, you can. Yes, it will be possible to watch a record of this webinar on our website tomorrow or on Monday, I think. Alan, yes, maybe JBot would be better at this point, but to be honest, I prefer keeping my discs inside my host. Well, at least this is what Starwind was made for, and kind of if building my own infrastructure, I would honestly go with some dull servers that has some good drives that can be configured in RAID 10 or 0, and yeah. So I'd look that way with no JBots, definitely. But I'm not saying it's a bad option or something. I'm just saying I don't like it. You could certainly go for that, and it would be good. Yeah, of course I would recommend RAID 10 over RAID 0, because safety is everything. Speed is good, but safety is better. But not if comparing RAID 0 to RAID 5, because RAID 5 has pretty terrible writes, especially if talking about write-intensive workload. But if we're talking about like highly read-intensive workloads, something like 75% reads and 25% writes, then RAID 5 or 6 are outstanding. I also write like RAID 50. Can you use a partition on a RAID array for Starwind storage? You mean having a RAID inside your host? Then, like your Windows has that RAID space in its disk management. Can you store Starwind image file on top of that drive? Yes, sure you can. That's exactly what I did on the presentation. What is the minimum hard disk drive required to install one? I mean, you could go for it with a USB stick as well, but I'm not sure what VM are you gonna run on your USB stick. Anything that can be passed to host as a volume, Starwind can use. So, and Starwind can use any amount of it. Our free version of our software has unlimited capacity, so you can get anything. See, no more questions. Hope answered all of them. I want to thank you all very much for coming to these to my tap rooms. I want to say that I like answering your questions a lot, and I'm having a great time with you guys. Hope you're enjoying it as well. We'll be waiting for you on my next meetings, and I wish you to have a great weekend. See you soon, guys. Bye-bye.